is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofor, and here's what's coming up.
And the high cost of healthy diets have put healthy diets out of reach for billions of people around the world, in every region around the world, including Europe. And this trend has been seen to get worse during the COVID-19 pandemic.
That was Nancy Alberto, Deputy Director of the FAND Agricultural Organization's Food and Nutrition Division, on the issue of undernutrition caused by inadequate vitamins, minerals, and unhealthy diets. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Following Algeria's decision to sever its diplomatic relations with Morocco, the two countries' foreign ministers displayed a divergence of opinions in most issues during their respective addresses to the UN General Assembly. While both called for UN reform to enhance the international community's ability to confront global threats like COVID-19, the two sides had totally different opinions on the Western Sahara and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Ahmed Fati, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi the differences between the two countries.
The difference between the Algerian and the Moroccan handling or tackling for the concepts they have submitted in their statement, while the themes were similar, they spoke about the vaccine equity, the shortage of vaccine in Africa, the need to increase the amount of vaccination because they are seeing that the pandemic is a threat to everybody. Nobody is safe until everybody is safe. While the Algerians think that to further have inroads with the multilateral track within the governmental channels and intergovernmental organizations like the United Nations, Morocco took more pragmatic approach because now they are having an initiative to manufacture the vaccination. They call it fill and finish. Their aim is to vaccinate their population and after that provide a health security across the continent. When we come to the Sahara issue, this is a huge gap between the two countries. Algeria diplomacy still attached to the old school and does not show any flexibility. We have to know that while the Algerians provided safe havens for the Sahrawi people living on its territory, Morocco provided development. I was in Laayoune in the Western Sahara. I met with the Moroccan foreign minister. I met with the Burundian foreign minister who was there to open a new consulate general. Right now, there is more than 20 countries recognize the sovereignty of Morocco on the Sahara territory, including the United States. At the same time, you have the Sahrawi who are living in the Tindouf camp in Algeria, where you have human rights violation en masse. The Sahrawi group that's controlling the Tindouf camp does not allow foreign media to go and visit, while on the other side, Morocco is opening the territory and another major city there, which is in Dakhla. Till today, nobody knows how many Sahrawi people are inside the Tindouf camp in Algerian territory. Algeria refuses to let the United Nations conduct a census inside this camp, not reveal how many people, if we're even going to start a referendum, which the Algerians are sticking to this concept, how do you know that these people are really Sahara? There is no verification of identities of most of these people. So there are totally different approaches, a quasi-military with a civilian president, and you have a constitutional monarchy started on a path of development and transitioning towards being a fully fledged democracy.
Another contested approach was how each foreign minister handled the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in the respective addresses to the United Nations General Assembly. Can you draw a comparison between what direction Moroccan Foreign Minister Nasser Bourita took this issue as opposed to his Algerian counterpart Ramtane Lamamra?
Both countries agreed that the occupation is a condemnable offense against the Palestinians. Most ministers agreed that there are violations for the international resolutions from the Security Council or from the General Assembly. Most ministers agreed that the path towards restoring a negotiation has been blocked. However, those two countries couldn't be different in their approach. Algeria still repeating the old rhetoric, we condemn no for recognition, no for negotiation, no for reconciliation. That's the trinity of the Arab rejectionist bloc. While we have Morocco engaged on a pragmatic approach to be able to have a say, Algeria all the time have been on the opposing side. Morocco dealt in a pragmatic way. They recognized Israel. They established diplomatic relationship. Morocco have an advantage that they have a direct channel, that they have established mutual benefits between the two countries. You can exercise pressure using these tools, but if you are totally on the opposite side and you're totally not recognizing your opponent, you totally have nothing to leverage your position, you're not going to reach anywhere. That is the difference between the Moroccan approach and the Algerian approach.
That was Ahmed Fatih, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. Guinea's military junta has read a transitional charter on state TV that outlines the missions and duties of the transitional government and bars any member of the junta from running in elections for a return to civilian rule. The leader of the September 5th coup, Mamadi Doumbouya, will serve as interim president. A civilian prime minister and an 81-member National Transitional Council will run the government. The council will be composed of 81 members, including 30% women, and will set the election date. While heads of state have been in New York City for the annual UN General Assembly, Secretary General Antonio Guterres convened the first global summit on the future of food with the aim of ending hunger and poverty, achieving gender equality, and taking action on climate change. For more on the summit and other diplomatic activity taking place at the UN, VOA's Jackson Vunganyi was joined by VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir.
Right, so this has been in the works for over a year. They've been planning this, and the idea is to get the conversation going on how the world is going to make its food systems not just healthier in terms of producing more healthy food for everybody, but also tie it into other areas of development, like climate, in terms of producing food in a way that's better for the environment, that doesn't produce more carbon dioxide, things like that. The numbers are really quite shocking. 3 billion people cannot afford a healthy diet. I mean, that's half the planet when you think about it, because there's a little over 7 billion people in the world. So it's a huge number of people. And nearly a third of all food that is produced is either lost or wasted. So, the UN is saying we need to shift how we look at food. It's not just a commodity. It's a human right. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure we provide people with fair, equitable access to healthy food and healthy diets, because right. It's so important to all areas of their life. For kids, at school, if they're hungry, they don't learn well. For workers, if they're not eating a good diet, they don't work well. So it really impacts everything. It's not just, food to live. It's food as fuel for our
for productivity.
Development.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it was reported that hundreds of civil society groups and activists boycotted the food summit, many complaining that the agenda had been hijacked by corporate interests. How likely is their refusal to participate in the summit going to affect its goals or agenda?
Right. So the Deputy Secretary General, Amina Mohammed, was actually asked about that today. And she said that it's been a very inclusive process, and that it's involved indigenous people, it's involved civil society, they've been extremely represented, it's involved youth. One of the slogans of this actually was no decisions about us without us. That's what one of the Food Summit slogans was, that the young people were saying, no decisions right. about us without
to
us.
Show that he wasn't
so, right. So so she said, well, they weren't, nothing is perfect. She felt that this was an extremely inclusive process.
That was VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking with International Edition's VOA's Jackson Vunganyi. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization is calling for action to stem food loss and waste, which it says are a major cause of hunger and malnutrition around the world. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
FAO experts say countries currently are producing enough food to feed the nearly 8 billion people who populate the world, yet more than 800 million are going hungry. Another 2 billion people, they say, are suffering from nutrition deficiencies, which can cause serious health problems. The deputy director of the FAO's Food and Nutrition Division, Nancy Aborto, says millions of children suffer stunting and wasting, which are deadly forms of undernutrition, and one in three adults are overweight or obese. That, she says, is another form of undernutrition caused by inadequate vitamins, minerals, and unhealthy diets.
And the high cost of healthy diets have put healthy diets out of reach for billions of people around the world, in every region around the world, including Europe. And this trend has been seen to get worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. And without healthy diets, we can never address the problems of hunger and malnutrition.
A 2019 FAO study found an estimated 14% of food produced globally spoils or is ruined from post-harvest to the point of sale. Another study by the UN Environment Program this year shows an estimated 17% of food that is available to consumers is wasted. The United Nations says around one-third of all food, or 1.3 billion tons of food, produced globally ends up rotting in retail market or consumer trash bins. UN economists value the loss at around $1 trillion a year. Aborto warns the UN will never reach its sustainable development goal of zero hunger by 2030 if food loss and waste continues unchecked. She says the ongoing problem also undermines the sustainability of global food systems for the future.
Food loss and waste account for approximately 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. While food that's lost or wasted, all of the resource that went into producing it, including water, land, energy, labor, and capital, all go to waste. Reducing food loss and waste can lead to greater availability and accessibility of healthy diets and reduce hunger and malnutrition, but this is not guaranteed.
The FAO has declared this Wednesday to be International Day of Awareness of Food Loss and Food Waste. Aborto says reducing food loss and waste would lead to healthier, more nutritious diets, decrease world hunger, and result in environmental benefits. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Independent investigators commissioned by the World Health Organization said today they have identified more than 80 alleged cases of sex abuse during the agency's response to an Ebola outbreak in Congo in 2018. Their report cited, quote, clear structural failures, unquote, and, quote, individual negligence, unquote. It said the majority of the alleged perpetrators were Congolese staff hired on a temporary basis who took advantage of their apparent authority to obtain sexual favors. The probe followed an Associated Press investigation that found senior WHO management was informed of multiple abuse claims in 2019, but failed to stop the harassment and even promoted one of the managers involved. In line with global statistics, South Africa is welcoming significant drops in COVID-19 infections and death rates. But medical scientists are warning that a fourth wave of the pandemic is likely to hit the African country worst affected by coronavirus in December. The government's rushing to vaccinate as many people as possible, but as Darren Taylor reports, some aren't going along with the state efforts.
For the fourth week in a row, the pandemic's slowing down around the world. There are now more than 30% fewer new infections in Africa than a month ago.
These viruses generally tend to burn themselves out, even though, of course, when they burn themselves out without interventions, they create a lot of havoc.
Professor Mosa Moshabela is head of medical research at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. He says vaccinations are the single biggest factor behind decreasing illness and death from COVID-19, particularly their efficacy against the highly transmissible Delta variant.
There is sort of infection immunity that is building in the population around the world for this particular variant.
Moshabela says South Africa's third wave is officially over.
It'll give us a little bit of a breather. It requires for us to accelerate vaccinations, but also to continue to monitor trends globally to see if there's going to be any other emerging variants that might replace Delta.
The South African government plans to speed up the number of vaccinations by declaring them mandatory. People who can't show an official immunization card won't be allowed to travel by air, for example. Some universities are already refusing to allow unvaccinated students and staff on campus. The issue of so-called forced vaccinations has angered some groups, including the South African National Christian Forum.
People need to make a choice out of their own will, not under duress or fear.
Pastor Marothi Mashashane says his group's asking the country's constitutional court to issue an order preventing anyone, especially the government, from making vaccines mandatory. To force the jab onto citizens, says Mashashane, is a violation of their rights and is also causing suspicion among some Christians.
The way this vaccination is becoming forcible, then it started to trigger in our minds as to whether we are not taking now a 666, the mark of the beast.
Some fundamentalist Christians around the world have suggested that COVID-19 immunizations are a way for authorities to brand people with a mark of Satan. They present no proof of this conspiracy, though. Mashashane adds that the government wants to make vaccinations mandatory to cover up the inefficiencies of its immunization program.
Therefore, that is really a triggering and making more resistant when the government is failing to have a clear approach and a manner of convincing or influencing. More than anything, they didn't even do much work to come to the community and inform the community about this vaccination.
The state argues that while it has a duty to guard against abuse of citizens' rights, it also has a duty to protect people from COVID-19. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Suspected jihadists and bandits have carried out a rash of attacks on civilians and a military base in two states in northwestern Nigeria, killing dozens of people. Kaduna State Security Commissioner Samuel Awan said an attack on Maidama village killed 34 people and wounded 7 others. Another attack on a church in the Kachia district left 1 person dead. He said those attacks sparked reprisal attacks on communities in Kasesere in Kaduna, which left another 8 dead, 6 injured, and several houses razed, Arwan said in a second statement without giving details on when that violence took place. Nigeria's military said suspected Islamic State-aligned fighters and criminals were behind an attack on a base in northwest Sokoto State. An AFP report quoted a resident as saying a medical and security personnel were killed. The Zimbabwe government's claim that the country's economy is on a strong growth trajectory is being disputed by citizens from different walks of life who claim it doesn't reflect reality. Andy Gondo gives us more on the story.
At the just-ended Zimbabwe International Trade Fair, both the finance minister and the president say the economy is strong and projected a 7.8% growth in gross domestic product by year-end. Minister of Industry and Trade Seka Nzenza also declared that capacity utilization by industry is at 57% and will reach 67% by year-end. But people are expressing shock, given that the U.S. dollar is trading today between 170 and 180 on the parallel market after jumping from 140 last week. That has left many struggling to put food on the table. Economic analysts say that while figures such as GDP growth are being corroborated by international institutions such as the World Bank, the reality on the ground for most remains bleak, if not worsening by the day. Patience Ngwenya, a government worker and mother of three, says that she is puzzled when she hears talk of an economy on the rise.
When I hear people talk about economic recovery and they say that Zimbabwe is on the roadmap to economic recovery, I wonder what really they're talking about, because things are getting worse every day. Prices are going up every day. Last month, we used to buy a 2-liter bottle of cooking oil for about 430-something. But this month, it has gone up to about 520 to 550. If you calculate the percentage increase, vis-a-vis the surplus that is being talked about, the recovery, the inflation that is no longer going up, you wonder what is it really that they're talking about. Because if things are getting better, we should see it as the ordinary Zimbabweans. We should see things getting better.
Even as the government maintains that inflation is coming under control, people are reeling from galloping prices and stagnant paychecks. Observers say the variance between the US dollar rate on the parallel market and the official exchange rate is a cause for much hardship, considering that most workers have to deal with service providers and retailers that prefer the US dollar or peg goods at the parallel market rate. Mandla Nyati, another Blawaya resident, says the talk of a growing economy is self-serving and mind-boggling.
But if the economy is indeed growing, why is it that people continue to suffer? There are no jobs. We hear of the budget surplus, but teachers have got no salaries. Nurses, they are suffering. All the civil servants, they are suffering. Even the permanent secretary once said the teachers should borrow money to go back to schools. So this growth is just there in paper, in theory. It is not benefiting Zimbabweans. There is no growth. I think they are better off keeping quiet because they anger many people. So I think this is just the electioneering. They want to appear to be doing something. Yet we know that in reality, on ground, they haven't done anything since 2017 when this new administration came into power.
Official stats from the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe indicate that the monthly cost of living surged to 48,000 Zimbabwean dollars in August from $41,000 in July, with most workers earning less than 25,000. Economic analysts say there is no arguing that poverty is increasing. Kipson Gundani says there is a dichotomy between statistics and reality. He adds that the stated growth rate is not driven by the whole economy, just a few sectors.
Yes, we might be talking about 57% capacity utilization, but that's only an average. Most companies can still be facing lots of difficulties in real terms. Yes, there is wage erosion because we are still in an inflationary environment. Yes, there are distortions in the market. The first distortion that we have is obviously the official exchange rate through the auction system, which is not moving with the changes in the economic fundamentals.
Critics say the government's economic growth mantra is mere campaign talk because the reality is that well-connected elites are eating with the rest of the citizenry, sinking further into economic doldrums. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinedu Okoye in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you once again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat.
Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice